Hello and welcome to the Mastering Social Media for Schools podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Gribble. I've been celebrating students and staff on social media since 2014. I'm in the trenches with you, and I know it's not an easy task. So if you're responsible for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more for a K-12 school district, you are in the right spot. You're going to lean in and learn some simple, actionable tips to help you reach even more people. And that's all going to happen while keeping your sanity. So let's get started. Hey there. Welcome to the show. Very excited to introduce you to Leslie Brewington, APR. She has a new venture, School Spirit PR. You can see why we get along. Our efforts are obviously to celebrate schools and connect those stories to the community. Leslie is really focused on helping schools across the country with her new venture, and she's really focused on strategic communication. And today, Leslie's actually diving deep into a report that came out from the Justice Department on the Uvalde shooting. It's a heavy topic, but Leslie's really going to help us break down the takeaways from looking at that horrible tragedy and seeing what we could do for our own schools so that we are set and prepared for something that happens if and when we need it. And unfortunately, there are a lot of things that can happen with our schools. So she's really going to break down the takeaways for schools and what you should do. She also has a specific toolkit, a shortened toolkit, because the report was like over 400 pages long, or maybe 500 pages long. And so she breaks it down into what you can take action on for your school. And then, of course, we're going to end with some really powerful social media tips and social media tips to keep in mind in a crisis. So I can't wait for you to learn from Leslie. You can certainly reach out to her if you've got questions and need additional information. And just before we jump into the podcast and into this week's K-12 PR tip, this podcast has been such an amazing gift for me to learn from. And I hope that if you are listening right now, it has been powerful for you to pick up little tips and tricks and things to help do your job better. If you have never left a podcast review, I would love for you to jump over to your favorite podcast platform and leave a review for Mastering Social Media for Schools. Those reviews help other people know that, hey, this is a valuable resource, this is a credible resource, and you should take a listen. So whether you've listened one time, whether you've listened all 200 plus episodes, we would love a review from you because it really does help us reach more people. And that's the goal. We want to help give support and resources to more school communicators out there. So let's dive into this week's K-12 PR tip before we get into the interview with Leslie. All right, today's K-12 PR tip is going to relate to our topic on crisis that we're going to talk about with Leslie today. You know, just a reminder, when it comes to social media, it's a tool in your toolkit, but not everything belongs on social media. And certainly in some cases, social media is the only way maybe to get information out. And so then, of course, you need to be able to use it. But you have a lot of tools with direct messaging, with texting, with emailing. And sometimes social media isn't the place for some types of communication. Okay. And so I just want you to keep that in mind. We didn't really specifically talk about that today in the episode, but keep that in mind, whether you're in a crisis or whether you're in, let's just say you're changing start times or changing some school boundaries for some of your elementary schools. Sometimes you may want to use direct communication rather than putting that out on social media, because really when you do share something via social media, you are asking for feedback because it's social media. You want it to be social. So you want people to interact. So just take a second to think about the right tool for the message. And then you're going to get a bunch more tips, and especially hang on until the end of this episode, because Leslie really breaks down three very important tips and one that I never thought of before until she talked about it today. And it has to do with a crisis and using social media and the algorithm. So stay on till the end because you're going to want to hear those three tips. So let's get to our interview with Leslie Brewington. Welcome to the podcast. Leslie Brewington is back and you've got a new title. So I'm so excited. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes, thank you so much. But I'm still the same old Leslie.
You're the same helpful Leslie. So Leslie has been on the podcast before and I knew that we had to have her back. And now she has a new venture, I guess, with School Spirit PR. So just share your background and then your role as CEO and president at School Spirit PR.
Absolutely. So I went to school to be a television reporter, but I never thought that being a television reporter was a forever job. It was a for now job for me. So fresh out of college, I head to my first job and I get assigned the beat of covering municipalities, courts and crime in the local school system. And while at that first job, I got to meet a fabulous woman who took me under her wing as a brand new college graduate in 2001 and showed me the ropes of how board meetings were conducted for the local school system, helped me understand the board book with all the supporting documentation, and just that became my beat. They met a lot. So I was going to meetings a lot between that and the five municipalities that I covered. And I said, if I ever got out of television, I want to go into school PR. I did not realize this was a job when I was in college, or a profession, as it were. So some time passed. I changed states, changed television stations, got married, decided to start a family, and thought, might be nice to have nights, weekends, and holidays off. Little did I know. But, you know, when you're in television, you know, if you climb the ranks and get assigned the more preferred schedules, you're working nights, weekends, and holidays when people are watching. So that being said, I saw a position open in my local school system. I applied shortly after having a newborn baby. And I got the job. And so they said, hey, if you can start before October 1, then you'll be eligible for the state approved raise. And I said, I will see you before October 1. So that was my career back in 2007. Did that for about 19 months and the Great Recession hit. And the school system made the decision that they wanted to protect cuts from the classroom. And my position was eliminated. So I have experience having suffered a job separation, which many people have experienced. And what is that like? What do you do? How do you land? You know, hindsight is providence. And so I got a chance to work for the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. So I have nonprofit experience in a museum setting and really got to work on branding a lot for an organization with an international footprint. And then lo and behold, the school system determined that it might be good to have a communications professional again. So they reposted my job. I reapplied. And as I tell people, I waddled back in at 8.5 months pregnant. 5 weeks later, we had an EF4 tornado hit three of our schools. And so I got thrust into the national media with that. A week and a half after that, I had a new baby, that my second child. And when I came back from maternity leave, I had a new superintendent. So yes, more than a decade of experience in school public relations, and I really enjoy it.
Jeez, everything hit at once. I mean, starting back with a job, having a baby, the tornado that went through, and then a brand new superintendent. So if you're overwhelmed right now, Leslie has been through it, and you've obviously also served in a lot of roles. Some of you may recognize Leslie. She was the president. In what year were you the NSPRA president?
During the pandemic, so 20 to 21. And we really use that time as a board to say, you know, although board service didn't look like it traditionally had with visiting lots of SPRUs, but we decided to buckle down and create a new strategic plan for the National School Public Relations Association after we hired an executive director. And so the work that the board that I was honored to lead really has set the groundwork for where INSPR is today. And in the time since my service on the board, I think that it shows the strategic plan has worked. We've grown close to 1,000 members more so in 3 years, which is phenomenal growth. And I'm really excited about that, pleased with how things are going with the association, and encourage any of your listeners or viewers who are not members of INSPRA to seriously consider it. It's at inspra.org.
Yes, visit that. And I would just say, Leslie, you were uniquely qualified to help lead that group during that time because of some of your other experience with change and crisis and all of that. So thank you for your service there. And I would just love to learn a little bit more about what you're doing now. So you've got a new company, School Spirit PR. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I'm excited to have my own company. I never thought, I mean, so much in my life was not planned as many of our lives. And so we just don't know the direction, but you can kind of look back over the course of your life and say, all of these moments led me to this. After board service on INSPRA, I just kind of looked around at the landscape at work and thought, I want something more. I had a desire to dream big, do big things, but my colleagues were really getting exhausted as a result of the pandemic. You imagine going into 2 years. And I really thought at the time, I'm going to be a frustration to them with all the ideas I have that I want to implement. And I started considering other career opportunities. And that landed me to working in consulting, did that for about 18 months. And I decided I wanted to give it a try and hang my own shingle, as it were. And so that's really been a lot of fun to come up with a brand instead of implementing someone else's brand and seeing it to fruition. So what I do is I partner with school leaders to champion the good in education through strategic communication so they can inspire trust, engage the community, and navigate conflict. But for me, as it harkens back to the brand that I have, I am all about celebrating students, teachers, and support staff daily. And that should not be a surprise to anyone who knows me really well. Both my mom and dad are public school teachers. My mom was my seventh grade science teacher. My grandmother was my middle school librarian, as well as my aunt and cousin. So this is really the family profession for us. And as a matter of fact, my sister is the vice president of communication for a research university in the South. So this is what we do.
That's awesome. So you are partnering with schools all over the country, or mainly in Alabama?
No, you know, I think the pandemic taught us a lot of things about how we can do hard things. And one of the things I quickly came to realize was that I could do this job remotely. So I'm pleased to serve clients from one side of the country to the other. As a matter of fact, I have clients on the West Coast and I have some in the South and have some looking up in the Northeast as well along the seaboard there. So I'm really excited about partnering with folks who want to do big things in their schools for students. I think that's a hallmark of who I am, is doing strategic communication in a way that impacts student outcomes. So if there are school leaders out there that need support, whether it's an extra set of hands or maybe you have a vacancy you weren't anticipating, then let's chat. You know, you can visit my website at schoolspiritpr.com.
That's awesome. And, you know, Leslie, I've been a big fan. I've learned a lot from you and others that I've met through the INSPRA organization. So definitely, if you've got a need for some additional help, whether you have a communications person or whether you're listening to this and you don't, definitely check out schoolspiritpr.com for more information. So today is a really special topic, Leslie. And I want to dive kind of deep into your analysis of the U.S. Department of Justice's 575-page report on the Uvalde school shooting. And so this is a sensitive topic, but you really dug deep because you are big on learning lessons and sharing some of those with other people. So I'm guessing none of our listeners, including me, have read that full report. So why did you take the time to review it?
I'm a nerd. I mean, I will admit that my earliest memories are of being in schools. My dad was a coach, and so I remember being in the gym at three years old. And I started reading at age four. So as my mom says, you put some words in front of me, I can't help but not to read them. As a communications professional, I was fascinated by what happened in the after action. And we see a lot of this now with social media, where people hop online and they share hot takes about how they would have done things differently. This isn't a finger pointing, because we recognize it was an incredible tragedy in which 19 people lost their lives. But with the after action report that the Department of Justice put out, I thought it could lead to best practices for how do we improve our work as practitioners in the profession. It is a meaty report that goes through lots of different areas, you know, law enforcement, communication, community engagement. Obviously, the thing that I was most fascinated by was the communications piece. And so I heard about it on the news and I thought, I'm going to go look it up and take a look at it. Because a lot of the coverage that we saw on this was a TV station, you know, reading it and synthesizing or taking the executive summary, and then it just fell away, unfortunately. And so I really thought this was an opportunity to dig deeper as a professional and saying, look, you guys may not have the time to dig in, but I'm going to do it. And so I jumped in, and I remember the night that I was reading it, I was texting with a group of fellow PR practitioners around the country about excerpts that I saw. I was copying and pasting it and dropping it in. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. I'm not sure if my friends ever read the 575-page report, but I thought, why not me? Why not write a white paper about this and synthesize this for people so that they can understand what the key takeaways are and how they can strengthen their own plans.
Yeah. I know you said you were a nerd, but you're also a journalist, right? And so you were digging in to the story, which I love. So what were those key findings that really all school communicators should know about and think about? We think about crisis planning. We pray that something like this would never, ever happen at our school. And unfortunately, it has happened and it could happen. So what are those key findings that you wanted to share with our listeners?
So one of the things that I remember in real time when the shooting happened and they talked about the demographics of the community, just at a very top level, superficial level, but I never really dug into it until reading the report. And what I realized was that the demographics of that school system, 90.5% Hispanic. And so that's really important. It gets the backdrop that I will share some other pieces of information. And when I was reading it, I was really arrested in my spirit that we've got to share this with other people. So here's the thing. There's a quote that is pulled directly from the report that said all the messaging was provided only in English. And this is a community where 90.5% of the community is Hispanic, heavy Spanish speaking community. And none of the information was shared. So I would really encourage school leaders to look at the demographics of their families that they're serving. Whether or not everybody in leadership speaks English or doesn't speak Spanish or any other language that you have in your community, your communication has to be multilingual. And as the report indicated, I mean, this really created levels of distrust and polarism and uncertainty with the community because they weren't able to receive the information in their native language.
Okay. All right. So evaluating our demographics and making sure that we really understand how we're doing our messaging. Were there some other key findings that you wanted to share?
So what I saw too was that there wasn't this coordinated effort between the school system and other responsive agencies in working together to send out information. We've talked a lot about this as a school PR community. You know, people talk about, are there crisis scripts? Do you have templates I can use? And as a matter of fact, the DOJ specifically highlighted the fact that that templates were used and they were not the correct templates. So somebody went to a file, pulled a template, dropped it into the automated messaging system, and it wasn't quite appropriate. So I want to stop there for a second and really encourage people who are listening to this. This is if you have a template of communication scripts, which is fine to have one, please, please, please make sure that you read them closely before you disseminate them. Those templates are not, it's a tool. I mean, it's not a crutch. It's a tool. It's something you can use to help get your communication off the ground faster. But do take the time to read it, to customize it, because that's so critically important. Another thing that the DOJ highlighted was the lack of transparency, real and perceived, by people in that community. Messages that were disseminated on the school district's social media channels weren't accurate. And that's probably in the midst of crisis. You know, we've all experienced working in a crisis situation where you've got a lot of people calling you. You're working with a lot of agencies. Who's in charge of the situation? We saw that unfold as we watched it in real time back in 2022. And so reassurances were sent out from the school system that there was, things were safe and people were safe, and that turned out not to be true. So for families that are watching this unfold and you're seeing it in real time, that one message comes out that you pin your hopes on, that later that information is found to be not accurate, there's a lot of fire there.
Yeah. So you talk about templates and not really being appropriate. I can't help but now relate that to AI. So we've got this tool, a template is a tool, AI is a tool. And I'm sure nowadays, you know, maybe somebody's turning to AI for some help in communicating, but we've all been taught that's just a first draft. So you have
it
to
is
go
just
through
a first draft.
Yeah.
And just like the templates. So if you and your colleagues and other school systems, whether they are school PR practitioners or superintendents sharing crisis communication scripts with you, don't use them off the plate. You know, here's how I like to describe this. It's like a recipe in a cookbook. Most good cooks are going to doctor it. Nobody is going to cook this recipe as is. We're going to adjust it for our family's palate. If we like more spice or less spice, or we like lots of pickles or whatever the thing is, touch that template before it goes out the door. I need you to doctor it just a little bit. Make it specific to what's going on in your district. And that way you're proofreading it and having an opportunity to make sure that what is in the template is an accurate reflection of the situation on the ground.
Okay. And I want to go back to the messaging a little bit in multiple languages. What are some, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but I know you'll have some suggestions of how schools tackle this. So do they have an interpreter? Do they put out all messages in both languages? I know some schools have 50 languages. And so it's not that, is there a certain threshold of percentage of your demographics being of one, you know, language that then would say, hey, all of your messaging should really go out in both? Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So the district I worked in had a small percentage of students that needed information in Spanish. It grew. I mean, it was a couple hundred students when I started in 2007. By the time I left in 2021, I think we had 600 students. But here's what I would say about this. I'm going to be really transparent with you, Andrea, and share this with your viewers. In the South, when we have bad weather, things shut down in ways that people where you live would just keep trucking with life. So, you know, the daily sleet, you know, we're going to stop and be at home for 2 or 3 days. We had some cold weather. We had a cold snap come through, and we put out automated messaging saying we're going to be on a 2-hour delay. At the time, our student population was of our EL population was growing. It was slightly ticking up. I mean, still a few hundred students, but it was ticking up. We sent out the information in English, not in Spanish. And so the result was when school started, we started getting reports that there were children who had stood on the side of the road since the time that their bus was supposed to come for an 8 o'clock start time. So when you start thinking about their children who don't have information or parents that don't have the information they need to make good choices for their kiddos, you can't go back to old behaviors. So from that point, it really became part of our communication strategy to make sure that we were communicating in English and in Spanish. Those were the two languages that we needed in our school system. So we were fortunate enough to have a social worker who spoke Spanish, set her up with automated messaging tools, created subgroups in the automated messaging platform so she could immediately call. And as time went on, this is very interesting thinking about this time of year that we're in right now. We had hired an interpreter. So our first person dedicated to being interpreter, not in other duties as assigned person. And she was very intrepid and wanted to partner in all of the ways. And so I happened to show her how to use our email platform. The day that I happened to show her was right on spring break in 2020. We went home, and by 5 o'clock, the governor said, don't come back to school anymore. So that one 25-minute demo that I gave the interpreter on how to use the email platform really helped us a lot during the pandemic, because we were able to send out messages in English and in Spanish simultaneously. And the thing that we were concerned about, I think I will say this, not that it wasn't a system concern. It was me working with my counterpart wanting the experience to be the same for families, whether in English or Spanish. So when we sent information out via newsletter and it had graphics in it, she translated it for me and I whipped up a second batch of graphics. So it was the same experience. It wasn't just a white sheet of paper with black font, beautiful graphics, pictures, the whole bit.
Okay. And I know, you know, nowadays we're currently in the year 2024 recording this, there's a lot of tools that enable us to do automatic translations. I just have a little bit of familiarity with like Parent Square, knowing that, you know, in some cases, even teachers communicating with families, they can write the text in English. And if the user on the other end chooses to get it in Spanish or another language, they can. And so it really offers some powerful ways to help with those language divides. But I think schools certainly need to look at how they're going to approach that. I know that English to Spanish or to other language isn't perfect, but no, I think they've got some pretty good methods for doing that. And so it may be time to start looking at that, because even in all of our schools, we have some diversity, you know, and definitely with the parents, they probably are maybe speak less English than the students might.
Well, I think the translation tools are a great tool if you have them, but they're AI as well. So just as it's the first draft in English, it's the first draft in whatever language you're using. So if you have someone on hand who can read it and make sure that it makes sense, in some communities, you may find that the population speaks another language, but they don't read it. So literacy issues can exist in English as well in other languages as well. So we do really need to think more deeply about specifically who do we serve and what do those families need? Is written communication, you know, is that a good solution, or do we need to have someone speak the words so that they can understand and take action on it?
Yeah. So, how can our listeners, we've talked about it a little bit because I've asked already, but how can our listeners use the findings to help prepare for a crisis like this in our schools? And more directly, what do we say and how can we say it so we don't damage credibility and trust in the district?
I love that question. You know, one of the things that I did as putting together this white paper, it's short, so it's 8 pages. So you can read this, you can shut your door and read this, you know, while you take a 20-minute break there. But what I hope is that you can use this as a conversation starter with leadership teams about how do we address the issues of multilingual communication? How do we address the issues of multiple agencies working together. For instance, we didn't talk about this yet, but there are free trainings that FEMA or your local EMA offers so that you can learn about joint information command structures. That will be a structure that will be in place if you have an interagency crisis. And so if the police, the fire department, and everyone else shows up, that's the structure they're going to use. And if you don't know it and you aren't familiar with it, then you're kind of left out in the mix. And so the DOJ report really highlighted that training. I've gone through that training. It's free. You can go online and sign up for it. There's a couple classes that I would recommend. I would probably do IS 29A and IS 100C. That you can do. Another thing you can do is call up your local emergency management agency, the county agency, and say, hey, do you have any trainings that are happening in person? I've done that. I went to one that was a 2 or 3 day training. It was absolutely fabulous and it was free. The government is invested in making sure that folks know how to do this so that we can work together in a crisis. So hopefully, if your school system hasn't talked about what happens in a joint information command, that this can be a conversation starter. And I know that this is the time of year where sometimes school leaders will say, we don't have time to do another thing. We've got to do this. When you're confronted with a crisis, you cannot go to a book and learn how to do this stuff. You need to know it before the crisis hits. And so some of it is just happenstance. You know, in the instance of the pandemic and me teaching my colleague how to use the email platform, and some of us get thrown into the mix. So, knowledge is power. I hope that people will use this information to strengthen their communications response because the things that you do now help prep you for how you respond in the crisis and could possibly affect how people see you after the crisis, because this is a community engagement effort. People are making decisions about your school system, whether the crisis is large or small, how you handle things, how responsive you are to feedback, whether it's positive or negative. Those are big things. The other thing I will say about transparency, we talked about this a little bit earlier, was that I really think DOJ did a great job of schooling folks on FERPA, which is the Federal Education Rights Privacy Act. And we all talk about FERPA when media list and can kids be shown on television? Can we take their picture and put it on social media? And you may have been guilty of saying, I can't release certain information because of FERPA or student privacy rights. FERPA is not a blanket to tell reporters to buzz off. It's not a blanket to tell communities in crisis, I can't release information. So what I would encourage people to do is to go read FERPA. You can do that. Doesn't require anything. That found it's online and you can do that for free. So understand what you can disclose and what you cannot disclose and when you can disclose it. FERPA actually has some provisions in it that says that if something is necessary, if information is necessary to communicate in an emergency, it is information that's going to be necessary to protect the health and safety of students or other individuals. So if you have an active crisis where you don't know where the threat is and we need to warn people, you can't just say, I can't tell you anything because of student privacy rights. And I've probably been guilty of that. So we as probably the designated point of contact for many school systems, as school PR practitioners need to get really versed on FERPA, how it's used, what you use it for, when you don't use it. And that wasn't something that I had ever considered until I read this report, which triggered me to go back and reread the FERPA Act.
Yeah. That's powerful advice. And I think, I mean, a lot of our listeners are thinking that they have to be careful of that. So great recommendation. And I love the FEMA free trainings. All of that's out there. So you've got this toolkit to help schools. So what's included and how can our listeners access your toolkit?
So the toolkit also includes a little checklist at the end that kind of, after you read through the whole thing, it talks about what you want to have in your crisis communications checklist, how you're going to behave, those conversations. I would encourage people to go to my website and schoolspiritpr.com, download the toolkit, pop in your email address, you'll be able to download the toolkit and use it to guide conversations with your colleagues. If you're not in a position where you're at the leadership table, I hope you are, and you can get it in front of the leadership team. If you're not in a position of being at the leadership table, discuss it with your team. If you don't have a team, read through it and think through the process of how you're going to handle and address these situations if they were to happen to you. And I get it. There are going to be folks that are listening to this and say, Leslie, I don't have time. I'm so busy. You don't not have time. We have time for what we make time for. So I would encourage people to prioritize thinking about, you know, how their crisis response will be, and not just relying on someone shared a toolkit with me, shared a crisis script with me, and I have it in my inbox and I'll pull it up on demand. For those school PR folks who have teams, or even as your organization, you have retreats. If you're a team of one, have a retreat by yourself. Bring your lunch, go sit in a different part of the building, go down the park, read these things, really think through. And I know these are, you know, it seems lofty, but for nerdy people like me who like to be deep thinkers, this is what I do. I make sure that I'm up to date on the information that impacts my profession, and I think about how I'd apply that information if I were in that situation. So that is a, you know, a mental tabletop exercise that you can have with yourself or with your team about how you're going to respond.
Yeah. And I would assume you'd at least want to review that annually to make sure that you've got it. And like you said, there's just, we don't have time, but we don't not have time, because when you need it, you're going to really wish that you had done it and taken the time. Thanks so much for putting that toolkit together and making it available. We've got a direct link in our show notes, so you can check that out and download that toolkit. This has been a very powerful and helpful conversation, Leslie, and it's deep and it's heavy, but I think it's really important. So as we wrap up with this being the Mastering Social Media for Schools podcast, what would be your best social media tip when it comes to a crisis? So
I love this question. I've got one for you.
Okay.
Okay. So the DOJ report actually talked about this. As the crisis was unfolding, the school system, the hospital, the police department, they were all sending out information. What they noted was that they didn't pause scheduled messages or messages that were off topic. So the first thing I would say is that if you're in an active crisis, take a look at your scheduling tools. See what the scheduled messages are and pause them, because we want our communication to be focused on the crisis response, you know, how families can reconnect with families, with their children, how you can help, all of those kinds of messages. The second would be with the multilingual communication. So we've talked about that a little bit before. As you're dropping information on your social media channels, particularly in a crisis, if you've got families who speak different languages and that's not your normal pattern of practice to communicate in another language on your social media, we might want to think about that. a third way that you could look at this, and I found this really fascinating. In that situation, the school system was publishing information on its social media channels. However, it didn't do new posts. It went back and edited posts. So what the DOJ noted was that instead of that new information dropping through the algorithm, it didn't show up as a new post because the original post had been edited. So I've been thinking about this a lot, Andrea, and here's what I came up with. I had a crisis back in 2011 with the tornado. And I had an occasion here recently to go back and look at the social media from that particular event, because we started social media the day after the tornado, because the tornado took out our website. It took out our phone system. So this was the only way we could communicate. And we did something I think was really clever that I guess I've gotten away from, and I think a lot of other people have gotten away from. But as we were publishing updates, we published update one and a timestamp. So Andrea, when you think about how a social media algorithm works, particularly on Facebook, at a certain point in time, it will stop saying the post was made at 3:15 and it will say 3 hours ago or yesterday or what have you. So what I would probably do is, for, let's say the first post happens, update one, set time, date stamp. Here's my key information. For more information, please visit the dark site that hopefully you've created on your website. And I would create a dark site. Hopefully it had a blog or some sort of feature like that, where we could have in chronological order all of those things. And I would make that a standard practice in my social media post. The number of update, the time, date stamp, the key information, and then bounce them back to some place where they can find the compendium of information, because who knows what the algorithm is going to do when you're going to find it on the social media platform and which update you're going to see next. I would also pin to the top of your page, you know, please visit, we are actively handling this matter right now. Please visit this dark website that we've created for the latest information. And a dark website, in case your listeners don't know, is a website or web page on your website that is hidden from view until something happens. And so you quickly turn it on. It may have a blog feature. It may have key points of contact information. That's one of those things that you can do on a bright sunny day when nothing is going on, that you don't actively have something to do. Because if you have to stand one up in the middle of a crisis, it's going to be a little bit harder. So even thinking about things, I remember having this conversation before I left, like what would go on a dark site? I'd put maybe a blog where I'd have that reverse chronological order of what has happened. I might have some key contacts on there. I might have some resources that the social workers or counselors provided on how you can help students that are experiencing trauma. I might have, you know, what are the next steps? Here are ways you can help. All of those things might be in the dark site. And that's not all appropriate for social media. I mean, social media is quick, imminent, but it needs to have a home. So where are we sending people back to?
Yeah, that's really good advice, because it's interesting that showed up in the report as well, that they were updating, because I've often, because you can't determine when a post is going to reach their inbox. And I mean, a simple one is, hey, school's 2 hours late. And then all of a sudden, 2 hours later, it's like, no, school's canceled for the day. And so, you know, how you handle that, because the first one you may not have an update on. So I'd always said, don't make a new post. Maybe you do go back and you edit, but then because the algorithm and it not being a new post. So I really like your suggestion of, if you're pointing them back to a spot to get the most up-to-date information, then hopefully, I mean, of course they have to read the whole post, which maybe they do and maybe they don't, but at least you have them directed to a spot that's going to have all the updated information then.
I think a lot of people may have gone back and just edited the information so that you didn't have erroneous information going on out there. You know, and I know there's talk about, can you delete things being a public school system? if it's bad information, we don't want it out there anymore. So, you know, and you can tell people that we've removed this post because here's the most updated information. But I had never considered about the tricky ways that the algorithm works. It's not going to serve you well to go back and edit that post because it won't drop through the feed.
Yeah.
It won't show up as a new post.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing you could do is you edit it and put your newest information up top and then say this was the first one, and then also create a new post with the newest information mm-hmm. only on it. That would be another option. But great
and
insight.
The news version of that is this is a breaking news situation. So for the latest updates, please go back and look at whatever referred back to the website. So it's an opportunity to think about how we use social media, what we use it for, and what is the key driver. And really, I think your website probably is going to be, you know, that's the digital representation of your physical building. So if something happened, people would show up at the school, right? Mm-hmm. They don't go someplace else and stand there and wait for information. They're going to the source of it. So you might tell them on social media a thing has happened, but go here for all of the information.
Yeah. And you say blog feature on that dark page because blogs show up in reverse chronological order. So the newest information is always on the top. So you're not necessarily going to be writing a blog. You're going to be writing a little update about what's happening, but that blog feature will serve you well in that case, right?
And yes, and it's time stamped. And usually yeah. blogs can be edited pretty quickly. Like you don't have to build a page and put all the little widgets on it to make it look good. I mean, the blog is pretty standard and it could literally be a 3-sentence message and move on.
Yeah.
Especially if you're having to edit from in the field. What if you're standing out on a campus and all you can do is, you know, send messages from your cell phone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great stuff to think about. Powerful and helpful. Leslie, I'm assuming in addition to serving schools, you also do some speaking as well, right? So if you're listening to this and you'd like, you know, this or another topic talked about at your SPRA chapter or maybe at your school with your leadership team, I'm assuming do both in-person and virtual talks as well?
I do. I also do facilitation of stakeholder engagement types of groups. I've done that before, and that's a lot of fun to get to meet different communities, understand their needs, and help them work to resolution on that. So it's all part and parcel of things that I've done throughout the course of my professional experience. But I'm really excited to have the opportunity to connect with lots of different school leaders from across the country and help them meet the challenges before them.
Yeah. So what's the best way to stay connected and maybe learn a little bit more about exactly how you work with schools?
So I have made the strategic choice to limit my social media. I'm on two platforms at School Spirit PR. The first one is X and the second one is LinkedIn. So you can catch me there. You can also find me through my website at schoolspiritpr.com. It has a messaging feature, so you can send me a message and I respond pretty quickly. I had someone respond and I emailed them back within 15 minutes and they were kind of shocked by that. You could email me as well. My email address is found on the website too.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure all of that is linked in the show notes. And again, we'll have a direct link to that toolkit that we talked about on Leslie's website. We'll get you there. If you have further questions, I know that you can obviously reach out to Leslie as well. Thank you so much for diving deep, taking the time to read the report and dissecting it and really helping us think about it as school communicators and how we can take action to improve our practices. So I really appreciate your work and I'm so happy that you are here to help schools all across the country with their communication efforts. So thanks for leaning into that, Leslie.
Thanks. It's been my pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will see you back here next week. Same time, same place with another great guest. Keep telling those stories. It's a busy time of year. There's a lot to celebrate, and we want to make sure that you get those stories out on social media. So thanks again, Leslie. Bye-bye. I want to let you in on a little secret. Creating this podcast is my favorite thing to do. Now, I have a pretty amazing job all around, but podcasting is my happy place. Of course, podcasting doesn't pay the bills, and I have six kids, remember? So I wanted to remind you of the three ways I help schools through my paid programs. Number one, and most popular, is my membership group. You can join my exclusive virtual community designed for school social media managers. It offers a treasure trove of resources, including Canva templates, daily support, live weekly training sessions, and access to a vast library of webinars. You guys, with over 400 schools across the country already benefiting from this vibrant community, you'll gain insights and tools that can supercharge your school's social media presence. Number two way that I serve schools is speaking. I love to share my passion for social media, and I do this with communication organizations across the country and school districts. You know, my keynotes really deliver actionable tips and strategies that can be implemented immediately, ensuring that your school stays ahead of the communication curve. And last, number three, my team and I, we actually do social media management for schools. So many school districts struggle to stay consistent on social media, and that's due to a lack of dedicated communication personnel. So that's where we come in. Our team will partner with your school district to manage your Facebook and Instagram accounts, and we ensure a consistent flow of compelling stories that come directly from your staff. That's it. If you are interested in getting more details on number one, the membership group, number two, speaking, number three, the social media management, hop on over to my website, socialschool4edu.com. And then until next time, keep telling those stories.